could slashing funding for Visit Florida affect tourism here on the First Coast? A look at that just ahead. And good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app, listen there, or on iTunes. Stream us live right now, too, on our Facebook page. And just ahead, visit Jacksonville's Paul Asselford on the importance of travel and tourism to drive our economy. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, why supporters of one much-loved local man are flocking to the ballpark this week to take a swing against ALS. Today's book club later on in the hour, and much more ahead. But first this morning, concerns grow about funding for Visit Florida, potentially on the chopping block as the state legislative session winds down. Now, ironically enough, the alarm about that is sounding right in the middle of National Travel and Tourism Week. It's going on this week, along with the Players' Championship in Ponte Vedra. It begs the question, what do cuts for state tourism, marketing, and promotion mean for our area here in Northeast Florida? Well, our local agency, Visit Jacksonville, doesn't get any direct funding from the state, but it does get help promoting our region overseas. So cuts to Visit Florida could lead to less international tourism here in our area. Not only that, other states are poised to take advantage of cuts to the tourism push in Florida, traditionally known as a state for tourists. Paul Asselford is the CEO of Visit Jacksonville, and he's been following this. He joins us now in studio with more about the importance of travel and tourism to our local economy and takes your calls. Hey, Paul, good to see you.
Good morning, Melissa.
And it is National Travel and Tourism Week. What do you think about cuts to Visit Florida? Do you think taxpayer dollars should go to market Florida to the world or not? We're also going to be talking about the Players' Championship and why that's such an important attraction to bring business here to our area. Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Or weigh in on Facebook. So, Paul, it's a big week for you. Not only is it National Travel and Tourism Week, it's also Players' Championship Week at TPC Sawgrass. The eyes of the world right here on the First Coast, which is just what you want.
That's exactly right. That image that is put out there about this destination for visitors from across not only the nation but the world, that kind of exposure is huge for a community like Jacksonville. Because what it really means and what it's really all about is the fact that the visitors come, spend, and allow our community to prosper and create a greater quality of life for all the folks who live here. So our job is to get Jacksonville out there competitively.
And the Players' Championship helps with that, of course.
Oh, my goodness. It's huge. Yeah. It's not only nationwide, but it is global as well. So, yes, we're proud to be partners with the Players, that's for sure.
Now, let's talk about the impact of tourism as an economic engine in our area. Visit Jacksonville and the beaches estimates that you get 16,000 out-of-town visitors every day to our area, $3.2 billion a year. So that's a lot of money flowing in. As we watch legislators in Tallahassee look at whether to basically zero out the state tourism agency, Visit Florida, how concerned are you about that when it comes to tourism here in our corner of the state?
Well, first of all, Visit Florida has been terrific about taking a look at those areas of Florida that have in the past not received the kind of exposure that the big name cities in Florida have had. And therefore, there was a lot of concentration on Northeast Florida, what it means, how it relates to what Florida has to offer, and how it's different than the other major cities that have significant exposure already across mm-hmm. the world. So mm-hmm. that kind of help that they have given us, both in co-op advertising programs internationally, media missions that they have allowed us to participate in, and what are called media fam trips, where they actually bring various media from around the world in to experience Jacksonville. It has been a great help.
It's 549-2937. If this agency is zeroed out, are you concerned about a dip in international tourists visiting our area and the loss of that, those dollars?
Well, certainly we're concerned about not only the decrease in international tourism, but I will tell you, with the world conditions today, when you look at the fact that international tourism is dropping off anyhow, having nothing to do with the budget of Visit Florida, with the current world circumstances, this is not a good time to be reducing the sales, marketing, and promotion effort for Florida.
What about the argument from those who don't see the value of promoting the state with taxpayer dollars? There was also controversy over the Miami hip-hop star Pitbull appearing mm-hmm. in an ad promoting Florida. He was paid a lot of money to be in that ad, and there was this sentiment among some Republicans anyway that, hey, you know, we shouldn't be spending taxpayer money in this way.
Well, as far as how it's promoted, that is something that we can take a good look at. There may be better ways to promote Florida overall. And so that kind of scrutiny, we invite, we look at it. At the same time, I don't blame any of the political leaders for taking a look at how tax dollars are spent. What we're spending it on, how the return on investment is really being measured. I don't mind that at all. We should be doing that for all tax dollars that are spent. We should be doing it on an ongoing basis. At the same time, when you look at what history has told us about states that have cut their spending, states like Colorado, which took a huge hit when they cut their spending. In fact, it's almost 20 years ago, and they still have not come back to the level of tourism that they had 20 years ago. Washington State going through the same issues. That if you look at the history and you truly understand the industry and how competitive it is and what that income means to communities, you start to have a different vantage point about how those dollars are really invested and what the return is.
And how big of a concern is that for you as the CEO of Visit Jacksonville that other states are going to take advantage of Florida pulling back from aggressively promoting its tourism sector?
Well, it's a big concern. I will tell you, California has already decided to increase their budget for tourism. I do know, too, that just north of us are a couple of states are taking a look at how
Georgia, South Carolina
can take advantage of what our legislature is doing to our funding. So there are people out there who know that they can benefit by what Florida might be doing to our Visit Florida budget.
All right. What are your thoughts about zeroing out the Visit Florida budget? As we speak with Visit Jack CEO Paul Asselford, it is National Travel and Tourism Week. It's also Players Week here in Jacksonville. Tourism is what we're looking at right now. 549-2937. Give us a call. Dennis is at the beaches. Hey, Dennis, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. We just recently, well, in cooperation with the Florida DOT and Visit Jacksonville and Visit Nassau, we recently dedicated the A1A Ocean Islands Scenic Trail out on the beaches area, A1A. And, you know, it was an effort by local citizens to help get that designation through DOT, and it's been a lot of work. But now we're hoping for continued support from groups like Visit Florida to help us support and promote that. I mean, our whole reason for doing all this effort was to bring in business and bring in tourists to our area and help improve our economic engine in this area. And I think it's really short-sighted on the part of the legislature to think that, you know, we're gonna cut money from the Visit Florida program, and that, you know, we're gonna save money in the long run. When we wind up losing money from the visiting tax, you know, money that's collected from the visiting people that come to our area. I just think they need to really think long and hard before they do this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dennis. Ecotourism. Yeah, big part of our tourism appeal here. What about his comments?
There's no question that the A1A Ocean Islands Trail, now getting the state scenic byway designation, that is the kind of image creation, defining what Northeast Florida is about. And that whole, if any of you have ever taken the scenic drive all the way from Amelia, Fernandina Beach, down to St. John's, I'll tell you what, it is one of the most impressive things that you could do. And look at all the activities that are there that you can enjoy even a day after day going through that scenic drive. So distinguishing our destination and then presenting that differentiation is what gets the visitor, the customer, interested in even exploring places like Northeast Florida.
Now, as we talk about Visit Florida, this isn't a done deal. Lawmakers made a final vote Monday to cut Visit Florida's budget by 67%, down to about $25 million. That knocks Florida from the second most well-funded state for tourism promotion to the seventh. Mm-hmm. Still in the top 10, but not how Florida has approached this in the past. Governor Rick Scott, at loggerheads with the legislative leadership that wants to do this, he could veto this bill. Are local tourism agencies like Visit Jacksonville making their voice heard in Tallahassee with the governor on this?
There's no question. I will tell you that it's all facets of the tourism industry. It's not just hotels. It's not just restaurants. But I will tell you, even the businesses that supply to our industry, whether it's the big food service like Sysco, whether it's, and I laugh when I say this, the kind of organizations like the individual private plumber businesses that service the hotels, all those people have been in Tallahassee speaking directly to the folks that are leading this charge.
Yeah, I mean, historically, Florida has looked at its economy as a three-legged stool: growth, agriculture, and tourism. Those are the three drivers of the economy.
Yep.
Historically now, there's been a lot of talk about diversifying that in the 21st century. But it's really remarkable to see this de-emphasis on tourism.
Well, I again look at this and say, folks out there, why do you think we do not have a state income tax? It's because of tourism. And if we allow the other states and the other parts of the world to take our international tourism and domestic tourism away, mm-hmm. I will tell you, from a budgetary standpoint, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Tallahassee, and you don't want to see them have to lean towards other tax income, particularly if it is income tax. Because that has differentiated our state up until this time.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking right now with Visit Jacksonville CEO Paul Asselford, as the budget for Visit Florida looks to be harshly cut down. We want to know what you think about that at 549-2937. It is National Travel and Tourism Week. It's also Players Championship Week. Let's talk a little bit more about that. How is Players Week marketed around the world?
Well, it is a remarkable job that they do. It's not just the players, TPC themselves that do this, but the entire golfing world looks at this as one of the major, major contests in the golf world anywhere. And therefore, it gets literally worldwide acclaim and worldwide TV coverage. And when they see the weather and what it's like here in Florida, and they see the people on the course and the crowds that come to this, it really sets North Florida aside in a way that I don't think any other kind of major event like that could do.
How does Visit Jacksonville ride that wave?
We participate in through the Tourism Development Council in the help with the marketing budget for the players. And so we not only do that, but we bring in, for example, we have 10 meeting professionals that have control conventions. We have invited them in, and we will be at the chalet in partnership with the city, demonstrating to them what North Florida and Jacksonville is all about. And the hope, of course, is that we're going to see some additional new conventions coming to the city, which bring huge dollars to Jacksonville.
Any news you can share on that front?
Only that there are three of those meeting professionals that actually have been considering Jacksonville, and this could be the culmination of the sell.
Oh, very nice. Let me ask you, since you mentioned that, what about this long-standing idea that we need a new convention center and it needs to be on the water? Where are we with that, and how is Visit Jacksonville working behind the scenes to make that happen?
We are working very closely with the Downtown Investment Authority, having a study that will be coming out, I believe, in the near future. Essentially, the truth of the matter is, and I've been in this industry a long time, you can't just take a single project like a convention center, build it, and hope that people are going to fill it. You have to have a destination that the attendees to those conventions really want to come to. And that's why the discussion about convention center development is and always should be closely related to the development of everything else that is happening in not only the downtown, but in Duval County. So with what is going on with Shad Khan and some of the plans that are taking place there, I think it would be very likely that you'll hear more about a convention center being a part of that mix.
And then lastly, how are Shad Khan's plans to develop this whole area around the downtown sports complex with entertainment, a new amphitheater, new retail, new hotel or even apartments? How is that going to help you as CEO Visit Jacksonville?
Well, what it does is it brings the downtown alive. And when you have, and I use the example, when you have meeting professionals that come into a community, one of the first things that they ask is, okay, what are my attendees going to be able to enjoy about this community? And how does that relate to all the other hundreds of destinations that we have a choice of going to? So when you hear Mayor Curry talk about, we are going to make it happen downtown, that is truly encouraging to all of us in our industry.
Well, it's great to have you in such a timely fashion. Enjoy the players, and thanks for dropping in with us. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
It is National Travel and Tourism Week. Paul Asselford is the CEO of Visit Jacksonville, and much more still ahead later. It's today's book club on the show as we peek inside the pages of Stacy's pick, A Man Called Ove. But up next, one local man's fight against ALS is getting lots of support. We'll tell you how you can be part of it at the ballpark. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, President Trump's judicial legacy. The president has more than 100 federal court vacancies to fill. His appointments could shape the nation's judiciary for generations. Who's on Mr. Trump's list and what it could mean for you next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm the youngest of six kids, and growing up, my mother always said to me, never get married and never have kids. They'll ruin your life.
Join us for more True Stories Told Live. Next time, a tribute to the moms. Stories by and about mothers. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, it's been three quarters of a century since ALS was first named Lou Gehrig's disease. After all this time, there's still no prevention, no treatment, and no cure. And now, Evan Yeagelwell, he's a partner at the Terrell Hogan Law Firm and a leader in the Jacksonville legal and Jewish community, is afflicted by ALS. This disease has eliminated Evan's ability to talk, chokes him when he tries to eat, and restricts him to a walker. Now, Evan won't hit a home run against this disease, but he's headed to the plate anyway to take a swing at it. On Sunday at 3 o'clock, the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp will join Evan and his team, Evan's Hope, to take on Lou Gehrig's disease. Right now, we welcome Wayne Hogan and Donna Orender and Carmen Stokes, Director of Development at the ALS Association Florida Chapter. And this is coming up next Sunday, May 21st, an event to help raise awareness and funding for research against ALS. Thanks, all of you, so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Now, Wayne, let's start with you. This is your partner at your law firm, and you've known Evan for a long time, right?
Oh, I have. Evan tried cases in Jacksonville in all of our courtrooms over a period of 30 years, a leader in the Jewish community, as you said. We hope to fill the baseball grounds with Evan's Hope through the website there, evanshope.org. I have to say, Ken Babby and the Jumbo Shrimp organization have been great. And we really have appreciated everything they're doing.
Yeah,
for this.
Really helping you raise funds and helping to spur new research and treatment into ALS. Carmen, let's define ALS. People think of it as Lou Gehrig's disease after, of course, the famous baseball player. What is ALS?
So amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, a lot of people, as you said, know it as Lou Gehrig disease, is a disease of the nerve cells in the brain and spinal cord that control voluntary muscle movement. It's estimated that every 90 minutes, someone is diagnosed with ALS, and every 90 minutes, someone is passing away from ALS.
And no cure yet, no effective treatment yet.
No effective treatment yet, but we just found out some very exciting news actually just this week that the FDA has approved a new drug. It is the first drug that has been approved in the last 22 years.
Wow. And why has it taken so long? It's an underfunded disease, isn't it?
It is. It's not an incurable disease. It is an underfunded disease. And that's why we're just so excited about this event, to help raise awareness of ALS and those crucial funds.
Wayne, tell us a little bit more about how this has affected Evan and a lot of other folks in our community, by the way, with ALS. It can be so difficult for the not only for the patient, but for loved ones to watch the progression of this disease.
Yes. I mean, Evan was the most energetic person that you can imagine. He always had a smile on his face and a new story to tell. And the effect of this disease, ALS, is that it has taken away his ability to speak. It limits him to a walker. Every time he eats, he chokes, and it's weakened every day. So A while back, he communicated with Senator Nelson, Bill Nelson, about the 21st Century Cures Act. And this is what he told the senator. I'm on a journey that I did not choose, in a path I don't want to travel, and heading for a destination that I don't want to arrive at. And he's concerned that so many people are condemned to walk that very same path. Mm-hmm. And it's his determination, because his will is still strong. His mind is still sharp, and he wants to work for them to try to prevent this from happening to others.
Now, Donna Ornder, you've also been friends with Evan for quite some time, so you're part of this effort, too, on Sunday the 21st.
I am, and I'm proud to sit here in this seat as a representative of the many, 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 many caring friends of Evan. And we recognize also that Evan's just one of thousands who are afflicted with this disease. And it's his hope. That's why we call this Evan's hope. That by sharing it, that he will do something that will impact so many. And so Evan's hope is that life will be better in the future for those afflicted by ALS. And that's why we walk hand in hand, arm in arm with the ALS. We're working with our state organization, but Carmen, who's been wonderful, is right here in Jacksonville. We want to help him make a difference. And so working with Ken Babby and Dave Ratz, I mean, the Shrimp have been just spectacular. We want to fill that stadium. Really, you know, we've talked about this. I love working with Wayne Hogan, by the way. But we want to, you know, whether we want to strike out ALS or, you know, hit it out of the park, every baseball thing here works. But the idea is to raise awareness. Money will go to research, and in our small community, really make a difference that will radiate not only nationally but globally.
So all the proceeds from the ticket sales to this ball game, they're going to go directly to help ALS research.
Absolutely. They're going to the ALS Association Florida chapter, and they're going to be helping with research and also that essential care that we had talked about as well, and just helping families that are navigating this disease right now.
If you're just tuning in, a huge crowd's going to take a big swing against ALS at the ballpark with the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp Sunday, May 21st, to help local attorney Evan Yegelwell. And let's take your calls right now about ALS. It's 549-2937. Fred is in Jacksonville. Hi, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
Hey, good morning.
I just wanted to call in. This is Fred Matthews.
Oh, hey, Fred. Fred, our media roundtable breakout star. Yeah, go ahead, Fred.
I've known Evan for a long time, many years. He helped me out on one of my many activities years ago. Just want to call in to wish him well and tell him that you know, he's got my support to whatever I can do on this effort. I'm glad it's with Jumbo Shrimp. I haven't had a chance to go to a game yet, so I'm looking forward to going there and supporting the effort. But again, you've got my prayers and my support, Evan, and good luck with this.
Oh, thanks for the call, Fred. So Evan's got a lot of friends out there, doesn't he?
He really does. His work has been fantastic over all the years, and for Fred to call in, it just gives you an example of the lives he's touched over the years. So we have created a link. It's called evanshope.org. It's without an apostrophe, evanshope.org. If you just follow that link, a person can buy tickets for the game. If they're not able to go to the game, there's also a link there, or a button to click that allows them to make donations through that very same evanshope.org. That is so important that the entire community comes out and acknowledges the problems that this disease causes, not just to the person, but to the family and everybody around them. This is a bigger deal than most people realize. Some people know about Lou Gehrig and what happened then. The Ice Bucket Challenge a while back helped to raise funds and also awareness. This is Jacksonville's way to raise awareness about ALS and what it does to families and people.
Right. And we have tremendous teams working on this. This has really been led by Steve Sherman, Jeff Morris, Robin Morris, Bruce Horowitz, Moti Demery. I don't want to forget all of these people that have met week after week week.
And our partner, Alan Pickard, who's a former president of the Jacksonville Bar Association. And just this past week, the current president made an announcement to the entire bar in Jacksonville. We want everybody that's a lawyer in Jacksonville to be out there at the ballpark on Sunday the 21st at 3 p.m.
Right. And Bruce Horowitz has been working. So it's May 21st. It's at 3 p.m. I know the Shrimp are playing another team. We're focused on the bigger win here, but we will all be there to watch the team play.
And Carmen, if people were just planning to come anyway that day, this will still help the effort?
Absolutely, and I would encourage them to go to the evanshope.org and make an additional donation if they're able to do so. We're also going to have a table set up at the game, so please stop by and visit us. We'd love to share a little bit more information about ALS and encourage you to get involved in this really incredible mission.
All right, come on out and support Evans Hopesters by purchasing a ticket for the Jumbo Shrimp game at 3 o'clock Sunday, May 21st, or go to evanshope.org. Wayne Hogan, Donna Orner, and Carmen Stokes with the ALS Association Florida chapter. I'm sure you'll get a huge turnout, and thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
We'll be right back.
On The Next Fresh Air, novelist Mary Gaitskill, who first became known for her collection of short stories, Bad Behavior, about people whose relationships and sexual relationships were outside of what was defined as normal. She has a new collection of essays. Also, Julia Tertian, whose new cookbook, Small Victory, collects easy recipes for home cooking. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Derry Touchton was acting crazy again.
He was quoting scripture a good bit and singing.
Someone called the cops.
I need a deputy down here.
Okay, quick.
Driver, step out of your car, get your hands wide and see him.
And 35 seconds later.
Shots fired, subject is down.
Derry was dead. Would better police training have saved his life? On The Next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Convinced you've heard it all before? Well, at Indie Endeavor, we challenge that notion. Tune into WJCT's After Hours for the best songs you've never listened to. Tuesdays at 11 p.m.
Welcome back. Well, despite the fact that the First Coast is literally surrounded by water on all sides, there are surprisingly few places next to the river or ocean where you can enjoy dinner and drinks on the waterfront. But one of them is the Grand Am of Jacksonville Beach, the Casa Marina, celebrating its 92nd anniversary this year. And that's the subject of a new segment we're trying out on the show, Movable Feast, as we take a look at this area's exploding culinary scene. Our fearless diner, Lee Court, founder of the Women's Food Alliance. Today, she looks at a waterfront wonder of our area, the Casa Marina, as she speaks with General Manager Mark Vandaloo.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate too.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm delighted to talk with you about the hotel, about its history, its presence in Jacksonville, Florida, because it is one of the only historic hotels of America. With the National Trust here. And what does that mean to you, Mark, and to your guests?
Well, I think it means a lot. I mean, it means everything to me personally. I've been there for 15 years. To see it grow and get that stamp, I guess we've been a member for 10 plus years now. It really kind of solidified our standing, not only in Jacksonville but nationally. I mean, it is a historic landmark, and it's being 91, 92 years old, and to be able to live that history on a daily basis is extremely important. And you ask what does it mean for the guests? I think that's exactly what it means for the guest, right? Like, it's such a unique venue. It's not your everyday banquet hall. It has all the feeling of a historic property, but obviously with the everyday amenities. So it's the history behind it means a lot, and we learn more every day about it. I mean, that's probably one of the most intriguing parts of my job, is to hear the stories from guests, people who just walking by, or someone who has found a postcard from 1942 yes. that wants to share that with us. And that's phenomenal. That doesn't happen at a lot of properties.
Well, I think one of the most charming parts of the hotel is not just its structure and having a banquet or a wedding or a grand event in the grand salon, which it was. You know, it's not a meeting room. And then, of course, it's only three stories high. And your 23 suites are individually designed, so it's not a cookie-cutter hotel. It's a little boutique property. But when you walk into the hotel and you see the giant black-and-white photos adorning all of the walls, you can't mistake it for any other place.
No, it is unique. And those photos, it's almost like walking through the decades of the past 40, 50, 60 years. And we get, whether it's a corporate guest we have staying there for a couple of days, or guests from out of town that are in town for a wedding, you hear more comments about those photos and how it ties into, oh, this was here, this is here, this is here, and it just kind of makes you think, all of this has happened over the course of now. We know bits and pieces. It's amazing to think of what the experiences that the property has had that we just touch on a little bit. So it's fun to see.
But it also has an iconic location. It is a waterfront wonder. It's right on the dunes of the Atlantic Ocean. And you step out of the veranda of the hotel, whether you've been sleeping over or you've come to have a cocktail in the penthouse or dinner, and you walk across the dune with the sea oats waving in the breeze, and you're on the beach.
It doesn't get any better. I take it for granted. My office is 150 feet away from the ocean, and rarely do I go. But you know what? That's a big part of it. That's a part of who we are, obviously. To be able to live over the years for the property to stand up, it certainly has its challenges, but when you can walk out your front doors or walk in your front doors and take a couple hundred steps, and you can feel the salt air, you can hear the waves. It's a perfect location.
Now let's take our listener up the staircase to the penthouse, the rooftop, where it's the only place in Jacksonville Beach where you can have a 360-degree panoramic view of Jacksonville Beach, the famous pier, as far south and north as you can see on the ocean.
When I first started at the hotel, it was a laundry room up there. We obviously renovated and turned that into what it is, the rooftop bar, the penthouse lounge. Reason I bring that up is because I would go up in the morning to start my day sometimes and just have a cup of coffee and look, right? Because there is no better view.
Well, it's very inspiring to be up there.
It is, and it's relaxing for all the obvious reasons. But to be able to share that, the trend of our business has turned into private functions and weddings downstairs, and we do quite a few of them. We wanted to be able to have something that Jack's Beach and local Jacksonville can come and experience every day. So that was the premise of opening the penthouse. And just for people to come up there and have a glass of wine, sit three stories up, and you can see them days off into the ocean and just relax.
So as we approach the next decade, as the Custom Arena is going to be 100 years old, what do you see in the next few years in Jacksonville Beach surrounding the Casa?
You know, it's the beach is growing. You know, I've seen the ups and downs in Jacksonville the last 5 or 6 years. It seems that Jacksonville's thriving, which is wonderful. But the beach itself, Jacksonville Beach, is certainly catching some of that momentum. And to see all the restaurants opening, hotels planning that to be their next destination, it's wonderful to see the growth. And you know, I view the Casa Marina as the landmark that we've been there the whole time, and we love to have more partners and bigger and better, but we're there to stay.
Well, I hope on my next visit I find the general manager of the Casa Marina Hotel, Mark Vandeleau, and we'll meet upstairs in the penthouse lounge and we'll share a martini and we'll have an hors d'oeuvre and watch the waves roll in and enjoy this grand old lady at the Casa Marina Hotel.
It's a brand new menu up there, so we can share a couple of entrees as well.
Thank you.
Everybody eats when they come to mine.
Have ideas for our new movable feast? Email me at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Lee Cord is the founder of the Women's Food Alliance, celebrating the culinary delights of Northeast Florida. Well, finally, this hour, it's the story of a curmudgeon. Now, many of you have had a neighbor like this, a grumpy old man with strict routines and a short fuse. I actually have a neighbor like this myself. More about that in a minute.
Oh, dear.
The best-selling book, A Man Called Uwe, is all about such a man. It was also made into an award-winning foreign language film. And it's our pick for this month's book club on the show. Book club blogger Stacy Guldring takes us inside A Man Called Uwe, and good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you today?
I'm well, and email us with your thoughts about A Man Called Uwe. Particularly want to know if you drive a Saab and why you like it. Why is the Saab important in this whole discussion?
The Saab is the fulcrum of which I'm not going to even worry about the Swedish pronunciation because everyone seems to be pronouncing it differently. But it lays at the crux of this man's integrity and identity. And let me explain you why, and then we'll get into the book, because it's super important that everyone know the entire history of Saab. I'm just kidding.
Where is she going with this? Okay.
Saab actually, it was an aircraft manufacturer. And after World War II, the people in the village of that started with a T, I'm not going to cock that up because I don't speak Swedish. But once they stopped making aircraft, they started making cars. And so the people who are making aircraft to defend their country now are driving cars that they are building. So Saab becomes a part of the oeuvre. The Uwe, the identity of Sweden.
Yeah.
So people, you know, like baseball, apple pie, Chevrolet, like that. So it becomes part of the identity, Ford versus Ram, all that business. So it's at the identity of who our curmudgeon main character is. And there is actually a thing about Saab, and it's called Saabery, like snobbery. This is a word.
Yeah.
Use it with
Saab drivers are really into being Saab owners.
It's really weird because I had some friends. He was a pilot. She was a pharmacist, and the whole family drove Saabs, and they were so committed. They were like pets. Like they refer to them as he and she.
Oh no.
And you know, if you ever have driven a Saab, the ignition is not here by the. By the console is up here. It's in the middle console, because if you've driven a Saab, and I know there are people out there who have driven them and own them, Saab performs, they're not in business anymore, but they performed an elk test because there were so many elk accidents, and they found that the drivers were having knee injuries. So they moved the ignition from to the right of the steering wheel down to the center console. So it's weird when you get into a Saab, even turning it on, but it appeals to a very quirky, smart, intelligent person. Do you watch The Office, or do you know about The Office? There's a character, Jim, and he drives a Saab.
Okay, but, Uwe drives a Saab.
Uwe drives a Saab, and Uwe has lost his wife. And he wants to kill himself. So it's a sad premise. Aww. But he lives in a neighborhood which is basically the Isle of Misfits. And all of these people just happen to intervene and show him why it's important to live, why it's important to continue your life. And the theme is you've got to feel useful and relevant. And if you can feel relevant, then you have a purpose in life. And all of these people, through every different chapter, show him another way why he is important. And I think that the takeaway is that you have to communicate. You have to communicate with one another, even if your new neighbors back over your own mailbox with their U-Haul, or even if
and that's what starts the story off, isn't it?
Yes, it's great. And then it goes back in time, and we see how he met his wife. We see the relationship he had with his father. So it's a really beautiful back and forth, and every chapter ends with a little moral, so that's nice as well.
And so the thing I love about this is, I think I mentioned, we have a neighbor in our neighborhood who is very grumpy, very mm-hmm. angry, very mm-hmm. curmudgeonly. Mm-hmm. He's really a walking cliche. He's very, very concerned with the rules of the homeowners association.
This is important, that condo commando type of mentality.
Every neighborhood has a guy like this.
They do.
And you just look at guys like this and go, what is your problem? But then when mm-hmm. you read a book like
There's
A Man
a
Called
reason.
Uwe, you figure out
There's
this
a
guy has a story. The,
he
There's
has a
reason
story.
For his behavior.
So that grumpy person, the person who's putting that letter in your mailbox saying you need mulch now, even though it's been 50 years since you've gotten near mulch. There's a reason he needs to do that. That is important to him. So, you know, humor, reach out.
Yes.
And there's a beautiful line in the book about friendship, and it goes something like this. When people don't share sorrow, there's a good chance that it will drive them apart instead. So with friendship, you have to share the good times, but you have to share the bad times too. Because if you don't, you're putting a wedge in that relationship by the sin of omission.
Oh, that's good. Now, I want to make the regular mention that our book club leader, Stacy Goldring, here on the show, when she picks a book for the month on our book club, you can get a copy, an extra copy, mm-hmm. at the Jacksonville Public Library, because they are our partners, too, in the First Coast Connect Book Club. So this month's pick is A Man Called Uwe. Look for it at the library. You can also rent the foreign language film.
Yes, which is very fun. It's on Amazon Prime and Netflix. And I just have to give a shout out and pitch one more book. And that is called The Luckiest Man, The Life and Death of Lou Gehrig by Jonathan Egg. Eig. And this ties in with the wonderful event that they're having this Sunday. Next Sunday, yes, down at the stadium. And it is a biography of this great baseball player who was struck with Lou Gehrig's. And you may remember, most people know about Lou Gehrig's disease because of a movie called The Pride of the Yankees, starring Gary Cooper. Now, little fun fact, Goldwyn was very reluctant to film this this story because he felt that baseball movies were basically poison. It wouldn't work. And now it's a quintessential film in the American canon. And this is a great book. It got great reviews, Luckiest Man. And we all can go ahead and pitch it for people like the wonderful Evan Yaguel, who are struck with this horrible disease, and hopefully some positivity can come with it. And you can always enlighten yourself by reading a book.
Absolutely. Now, A Man Called Uwe, which you wanted to focus on this month, are you leading a discussion about it?
I have led several up to this point, and the overwhelming response to this book has been so incredibly positive. I had one person so far who has wanted to throw the book back at me with great force. And the reason was that this person...
Has anyone ever really done that, though?
Oh, yeah. I've seen books fly.
Oh, man.
Yes. I've seen a lot of this with the arms crossed, pushing the book away on the table. It doesn't matter. Just come to the book club. Let's talk. And it was because the book hit too close to home.
Ah.
Had another person who had recently lost a spouse, who said this book to her, spoke to her on such an incredibly deep level. Now, there are other people who just found it hysterical. There are other people who thought it was an implication and an indictment of the Swedish healthcare system, because there's a lot of pushback on bureaucracy in this book. Every single group is related on the spectrum. You have fat people, thin people. We have our dog lovers. We have our cat lovers. And there is a cat who plays a very important role as the metaphor of this curmudgeon. He hates the cat, kind of like in Doc Martin, where all that Doc Martin wants to do is kick dogs out and get rid of them. So the cat is this force. And the cat goes through a metamorphosis as Uwe goes through this metamorphosis of realizing that trying to kill himself is not the answer, because the cat shows up at the wrong time, or the neighbor, the pregnant neighbor
can't
has to go
through
to the
with it.
No.
Too many people intruding on him.
No, he cannot.
All right. It's A Man Called Uwe. It's Stacy's pick for our book club this month. And go to the Jacksonville Public Library. Look for extra copies of this book. There are partners in the book club on the show. This is her pick for the month, and she never steers you wrong. I'll tell you what.
This is a wonderful selection, and it's for people of all ages. It'll appeal to everyone. And what's so amazing about it, it's translated from the Swedish, and the nuances of the book, the descriptions, very, very clear. So I would not steer you wrong. It's worth the while. If you want to check it out at the San Marco bookstore, they have it as well. I'm sure all the local bookstores have it, because it's very popular. And then read see the film when you're done, and it's so fun to compare and contrast.
A Man Called Uwe. Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the show. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime or on iTunes. Next on 1A, how politicized are our nation's courts? I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.